UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.
Buenas tardes, queridas y queridos oyentes. Nos estáis escuchando el lunes 13 de mayo en directo en la radio de la UMH o después en nuestras plataformas. Soy Salah Dinuere y seré el encargado de guiar y moderar el capítulo de hoy. Durante el capítulo de hoy tenemos con nosotros desde Turquía a la profesora Feride Zeynep Güder de la Universidad Özgür University de Turquía. Este capítulo será en inglés para poder aprender y disfrutar de la experiencia de la profesora Feride. Hello everyone and welcome again to the show. Today is a special show. We have with us from Turkey the Professor Feride Zeynep Güder. She is a professor in the University of Özgür University. She is expert in political communication, journalism, and artificial intelligence politics. And today we're gonna speak with her about her experience and her experience here in Spain also. And we're gonna talk to her about the future of politics with the age of artificial intelligence. Thank you, Professor Feride. And may I call you Feride? am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, of course. Yeah, Feride, with the same pronunciation.
Yes, I was just talking to her before the program and we were saying that her name is half Arabic, half Turkish.
Half Persian.
Yes, and because Turkey is a Muslim country, they have a lot of stuff in Arabic. No?
Of course, yeah.
And the Turkish language also is mixed with Arabic and stuff, no?
Actually, there are some words borrowed from Arabic, but Turkish is another language.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So we're going to start with, can you talk to us about yourself, your expertise? Can you just present yourself very casually?
I started working as an English language teacher in 1988, and it's been like about 35 years past from this part. And I jumped from one discipline to another one, and I have a multidisciplinary trajectory as well. After, you know, working on language, on discourse analysis, I did my PhD on journalism. I decided to choose this department because I translated a book by Michel Foucault. So because of this book, it was about history, Marxism, and Foucault by Mark Poster, and I decided to do something else apart from English language literature and something else. And I learned the importance of media. I learned the importance of power issues from this book, and I get my education from media and journalism. And I'm very happy that I, you know, changed my job position, career to media studies, because media is a kind of discipline that can embrace lots of disciplines. And this is the way I can work, because I like being multidisciplinary, and I would like to focus on something, politics, media, discourse analysis, language, and cultures as well. So media studies allows me to work on this, topics.
Yes, you said that you translated the book of somebody called Michel Foucault. Can you explain to us who is it? Who is he? And what is its relation with your studies or your expertise?
It was very interesting. No. I'm just a translator. When I picked the book, it was 2006 or something like that. And it was about Mark Poster. Mark Poster is an American writer. He passed away, I guess, two or three years ago. The title of the book is Foucault, Marxism and History. When I tried to translate it, I met lots of terminologies, and I started to learn about Foucault. Michel Foucault is a French philosopher, and he is talking about the power issues. And he said that the language is power, and the use of the power is, changes everything. And the media is the one of the instruments that to deliver your power issues. So everything related to Michel Foucault is the power issues. He explained it, and he's very interesting philosopher. Why? Because he really describes the current situations nowadays that we are having. And before internet, he was, he explained the importance of media and digital media. And he's one of the most critics of this century. I recommend you read, if you are interested in media studies in terms of ideologies and politics, to read one of his books.
And why this reading this book helped you choose your studies or your expertise? Why this book made you like change or choose your career?
It's very interesting, isn't it? There are some turning point in your life that you read one book, you find yourself as a translator, and you decide, hey, there is something else in this world. Yesterday, I had a workshop with my students from Üsküdar University and the other universities I give politics. One of the students quotes from Nietzsche, and the Nietzsche says that the future is still, we don't know what is gone. The rest is still not, we haven't started yet, it says. So once, this is the idea that we are still in the process of something. And when I was in the middle of my career when I translate that book. And when I meet Michel Foucault's ideas, I was, shocked because I have never questioned something like that. He started to me. He gave me an intellectual enlightenment. And then one day, you took your intellectual enlightenment from one sentence, from one idea, and then you start questioning everything. That's why I didn't want to do my teaching position as just a language teacher. I want to do something more. That's why. And, is it a good explanation? I don't know.
No, it's very nice. It's very nice. Thank you. When we were just before the program, we were talking with our colleagues in here, and you mentioned that you have a TV program in the University of Turkey, or your university in Turkey, the Üsküdar University, you have a TV program. Can you talk to us about that TV program?
Yeah, we have a television, Üsküdar University Television. It's similar like this one. We have a very small radio studio, and then the students are, the media students are taking their television programs, and these television programs are broadcasted on live. My program is Beyond the Lines. It's called Beyond the Lines. Beyond the Lines means that we are going to criticize something, and I invite the academics and some people that I see important academically, and then we discuss something. It takes 45 minutes, and then we shoot, and then it's been recorded on YouTube as well. It's in Turkish.
Is it weekly? Is it Turkish or English?
Turkish. It's Turkish.
But is it weekly or daily or?
I'm doing my teaching, so it's bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly, every 2 weeks.
Because it's very difficult to organize a television studio program because I am by myself, create the content, invite, guests. Afterwards, the program, I try to, use the hashtags. And then there are so many important guys in the studio, like Ömer and the Ayça. They are Ayça is the head of the studio, and Ömer is responsible for recording everything and the quality of something. And we have the students who get their training in the studios. yes. as well for the media programs.
Here in the UMH, we have a similar. They have a similar program. It's not like political students. They are not really usually are very interested in the media part mm-hmm. of politics, but like the students of journalism and the students yeah. of audiovisual communication, they usually like really interested in studying that. I was really like interested yesterday when we were just to give people the context. You come here to Spain. This is your second time here in our university.
Yes,
and you come like to give us like other professors here in our program, the Rebando Moros. We receive a lot of professors that they come to teach us about some their expertise, but here in Spain, and they come in the programs called like Erasmus Exchange mm-hmm, for mm-hmm. Professors or Erasmus for Professors.
Yes.
And you came here, you came last course when we were in the second year, and you come here, you came this year also. It's so very nice experience. And yesterday you were also like streaming the same thing that you were telling us. You were streaming it to your students back home.
Mm.
I was really surprised that your students back home, all of them, they understand English, or at least they are able to follow program to follow seminars in English. Can you talk to us about the level or the level of English that they have, your students back home?
Yeah, since I've been working in international departments, I mean, the English medium is translation departments. They know perfect English. they're supposed to. But the media part, the journalism part, we are opening a new media communication department. So the medium of languages would be English, but the rest is the Turkish. So the yesterday's was the international relations students, so they are supposed to know English. And also the program that we did, the workshop last night, was in English because there are some courses, there are some programs in new media and political sciences that they are in English. And one thing interesting, what is interesting here is that we are discussing something very far away future, but, you know, I opened courses, niche courses, I say. Niche courses are critical yeah. digital literacy like that. And there are so many interesting topics that we talked.
You like, you said this also in the course that you gave us, you like starting niche courses for
niche
people,
course, yeah.
Specialize in something and some stuff exactly, including English and journalism and politics, but especially about something. For example,
yes.
this year you are talking to people about artificial intelligence
yes.
and the future of this technology
yes.
and the effects of this technology on our politics. Right now, the technology is for the future. It's going to be developed in the future. But right now, we see the beginning of the change that artificial intelligence are making here in politics. Can you talk to us about what do you think about that?
First of all, when you introduced me as that her expertise is artificial intelligence, I need to be humble about this because we are living in the information age and then everything is changing and I don't feel myself as an expert on AI, but I am just the one poor academics, like the poor, how can we say, people around here trying to understand what is going on in media and in you know, digitalized world. So when we come to do AI,
based on your based on your presentation, I know you are saying that you are not expert, but based on your presentation and the books that you read and the, uh-huh. that you have read and the stuff that you talk to us in our class about it, I can happily call you an expert in that subject, especially about the philosophical part of it and the. And the politic part of it.
I'm very happy to hear that. Thanks a lot.
So you were saying that you don't consider yourself expert in that.
You know. I still, because you are always at the beginning of something.
Yeah.
And I am a little bit kind of following the Socrates philosophy that I know one thing that I know nothing, unlike Nietzsche.
that's very humble of you. But you were saying that politics, or not you only, but everybody was saying like the artificial intelligence is going to change the politics forever.
Yes.
Can you please explain to us that?
First, as a system has been changing because the human and the society has to be put in a kind of system. We call it algorithmic systems, and the governments can be changed as an algorithmic governance by Rube Roy. Algorithmic governance means that you are governed by the algorithms in work culture, in business culture, and in everything, in every systems, and everything is digitalized, like digital citizenship, digital government, and so on. And there is no the classical, politicians at that time, because there will be a hidden power. So this hidden power, this hidden algorithms are governing us, and this is the challenging part for us. Why? Because when you don't know who is going to talk about your position or your rights, you are in the middle of something that is hidden, something is not clear. But so there will be no interrogation with this system. When they give you a fine, there is no one to discuss why are you doing this. There are the rules. Rules are written, and you are supposed to obey these rules. And this is the challenge for all human beings. So the challenge in terms of the system, and at the same time, I mentioned in my lessons the invasions of the human mind as well. So they are going to use the human enhancement technologies as being part of this hive mind. Hive mind is another word of big data. And when we, scientific films, you see, we call these films maybe fictional, but these fictions one day comes a reality, our reality. And then once we are connected to a collected consciousness high mind, that means that our mind, our data has been, attached to these high minds. So this is another level of change in the systematic one, and at the same time in the body part. Our body has been integrated to this system as well.
Can I please disagree with you on one part that you said? You said that when somebody gives you a fine, you can't disagree with it. Mm-hmm. But at least I don't have experience in the laws all around the world, but at least here in Spain, like they have like administrative law. Mm-hmm. When the police or somebody gives you a fine and you disagree with it or you think it is illegally given, you have like a little bit of time to disagree with it and to go to the... if it is given by the police, you can go to judge or somebody, or you can write a form saying that you think that they didn't respect your right to do something, or your right, or they like it is illegal.
Yes, that's the way how the human governed system works. That's what I'm talking. We are on the same page.
I thought you were saying you were comparing artificial intelligence to fines, that they are there to stay and you can't say or do anything about them.
I'm trying to say that in algorithmic governance, mm-hmm. there will be no policeman, obvious policeman. You will be just given the fine, but you don't know who took this decision. Maybe while they are writing the fine, for example, 1 month ago, I parked a car, I parked my car in an incorrect way. And then they called me and they said, hey, why did you park here? I said, I didn't know that it wasn't in the correct place. And then they fined me after the sale. And I was very angry because I thought that once they talked to me, they are not going to give me the fine. Mm-hmm. At least I have someone to talk it. Mm-hmm. But they were sent me the fine. There is a human element there. But in algorithms, there will be no human element. So even that point, you know, even the harshest one, you see the people. But in this case, there will be no human in the system. So that would be very cruel. That would be very harsh. That the absence of, you know, human element in any kind of interaction, in any kind of life process, will turn our lives as a, you know, a difficult one. That's what I'm talking.
That's interesting. So you are saying that, you were saying that also when the artificial intelligence is going to be very advanced, they are going to get a little bit by a little bit to hardware that has something to do with humans. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I think when we talk about the prescriptions or things to do list, is disciplining people. They give you the, you know, the some rules what to do and what not to do, mm-hmm. and this is like a legal issue. These are the laws. I mean, and then in this case, you don't know who is the subject. Subject means in the philosophical means, it's the one who can take decisions for the autonomy of their life. Okay, mm-hmm. If you have the autonomy of your life, and then you have the freedom to express yourself, to be yourself, to be autonomous. But these kinds of rules are written to you and written to give you as an algorithms. And where is the human element there? And that's what I'm talking here. We call it algorithmic culture. That's why.
Exactly.
Is it complicated one? I'm not sure that I explained it a lot.
One of my questions that I was gonna ask you is, you are, or at least in my degree, uh-huh. in my class, you gave a lecture about, or you were trying to explain to us more about algorithmic culture. Can you explain it, please, a little bit further?
Yeah. Algorithmic culture is the latest step of this, you know, information society. Information society, data is the knowledge, power, okay?
Yeah.
So knowledge is power. Now, the new oil, they say that is the data, is the new oil.
In the past, knowledge was the power. Now, data is the power.
Data is the power.
And you can use data to...
governance. So...
you are saying something very cool. You said... data is the new oil, because in the past, until now, who has the oil has the most resources. And it's not literally oil. You are talking about like natural resources. If you have natural resources, you are rich and very rich. Now, the companies that they have data, they have the power. For example, in your opinion, what are the companies that have most data in the world? Because I know one, but I'm afraid to say it. I'm joking. It's Google. Google is the one that has the most data
is the
evident all around
one.
The world.
We see the Google maybe much more than the other algorithms. Maybe Google is the one that we can see.
Yes.
But the thing is that we have dark web and deep web. And this, the dark web side of it, this is the darkest part of the web or the... high-tech technologies. You know, there are the darker part of it.
I don't understand. I thought the dark web and the deep web is the same. What is the difference between the two of them?
Oh, there are differences. Deep web is the place that you can reach the information that you wanted, you know?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you can't reach some information, okay, legally.
Yeah.
Legally. But dark web is the place for the criminals. If you want to do something illegal, it is the place of dark web. The dark web is the iceberg You know, we see the, you know, the normal web that we are using, the general ordinary people is using the web, is just the tip of the iceberg. The dark web and deep web is the, you know, the real part of it.
I heard that metaphor before, but I'm going to try to disagree with it with you about this point. I think that normal people like me and probably like you, when we go online, we go on the Google and Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp, which is the normal web. I know that a lot of people, probably millions of people, are using the dark web and the deep web. But I think when you say it's the iceberg, that the deep web is far more, has more users or more content than the normal web, I don't think so.
Data capacity. We are not talking the same thing. I'm not talking about the population of the users. I'm not talking about the users. Uh-huh. I am talking about the capacity of the data. The data which is open to the public is limited. So that's the tip of the iceberg.
Interesting.
So every data is not open. Do you think that you can reach every information by using Google? No. Even geographically, they don't open the information to the same data to every locations.
That's a good point. That's another point. Yeah. Sometimes, for example, in Russia or in China, for example, in China, they prohibit their population or their people that live there from using the internet, the same internet that we use here in the West, in Europe, and the States or the North of America. And Europe also has, the European Union has a lot of laws that try to protect the consumers. So a lot of not very good companies, according to the EU, they can't have access here. Or companies that are like trying to steal data from people, or companies that they don't respect the privacy of people. The EU has problem with them and does block. It's like a few years ago, I remember it was very big in the news that the EU changed all the laws of YouTube. So people from all the world, because YouTube was trying like to make it the same for everybody, they changed the whole world just like to adapt to Europe, which is one of the biggest consumers at the moment. Back then, I don't know at the moment if they are the biggest users, but back then they were very important for YouTube, and they changed a lot of laws about ads and about a lot of stuff so that they can be accessible for everybody. So it's a very good point that you made, that you said like, the internet is different from where you are from to other places.
That's the, you know, the surface level of web.
Yeah.
Even not this equal for others. And also deep web is another level of discussion.
Interesting.
This is another stratum of the data. Imagine that this is the ocean of information.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, you know, swim on the surface. That's why they use the deep web. And once we get, you know, try to plunge into the deep diving, we don't know what sort of information that we can reach. And then there are some locked information. And we call it the big data. And then this is the thing that scares, we must be scared of, you know. Why? Because they don't want to share every information. So not everybody can reach the information. And at the same time, when we talk about the democratization of the media, democratization of the digital media, is just on the surface level. It seems as if it is a democratic, but at the same time, it's been used by profiling people. When you are profiled, your information has been, you know, put into a system, and your information or your digital twin is your digital activities, your digital existence, digital identity, has been stored as a, you know, when the profilation means that you've been categorized by someone.
Yeah.
We don't know who are these people, but maybe not now, but they are collecting the information. Maybe later they will use you. They will use this information. So this is a kind of surveillance.
That's very scary. I would like to believe that we live in a world that nobody has a lot of data about me. I understand that Google or Instagram or YouTube or even TikTok has a lot of information about me, not because they want to use it to hurt me, just because they want to use it. Not me. When I say me, I mean the whole world. They want to use it to to know how to sell better to me. For example, you said this in your course when you they say, I'm not sure about the correct, I'm not sure if this information is correct, but they say when you Google something or when you say something next to your computer or next to your phone, they give you ads for that. I understand that ads are very important for Google, for WhatsApp, for Instagram. WhatsApp is free. It's the only application, almost the only application in the world that it is ads free. But other applications like Instagram and TikTok, they use your algorithm. If they know that you are interested in something, they give it to you, they sell it to you. But I would like to believe that we live in a world that nobody has profiled us yet. At least for now, I would like to believe that we live in a world that Instagram or YouTube have data about me, but they only use it to send me ads, not to... I would like if nobody has data on people, but at least we believe that if they have something, they only use it to sell us stuff, not to use it against us.
I partially agree and totally disagree with you. Ideologically, when you live in a place that if people wants to learn your ideological position and you will be profiled according to the tweets and the your likes. So this is your political identity.
But can you explain to us? I think I know what you mean by it, but can you explain to us a little bit more? What do you mean by profile? Because I learned the word watching like series about the FBI and something. When they have people that's called profilers, when they try to catch a criminal or a serial killer, they try like to design it. Ah, this person this is probably that, between 40 and 30. This person is probably lives in this area. This person is probably white, black, or I don't know. They use this kind of information to describe people. Can you explain to us what do you mean, you especially?
Okay,
by this?
I would explain starting from the surveillance techniques that we have, the kind of digital surveillance right now. People are following people's digital activities, digital records, digital tracks, because of the digital footsteps. And these digital footsteps are created our digital identity. My digital identity represents me.
Mm-hmm.
I have another Feride who is alive in digitally, okay? This digital Feride is doing something on the internet. She likes a YouTuber. She writes a comment on a YouTube, or she creates a content in TikTok, okay? So once you enter my name on the Google, and then you reach my digital identity. Oh, who she is? What is she doing? This is that. This is what she likes. And when you follow me digitally, when you track to me, you can imagine, you can, construct an identity that this Feride likes this one and this one. And if the algorithms are following me, you are quite right that the advertisement commercials are sending me based on upon my what I like and what I, what I watched earlier. And
we were also talking before about something very interesting, if you can link it with this.
Mm.
We were saying like people have the right to democracy and media, democratic media. For example, here in Spain, every region and every country like Spain, the government has like a channel called, here in Spain, they are a channel and the radio, they are called RTVE, which is the radio and national TV that they use like to give information for free to people. Mm-hmm. There is the private ones, but there is the public one. Here, for example, in the Valencian community, we have a punch, which is in Valencian. I don't understand it, but people like usually like to listen to it on radio or read it because they have like online websites and watch it on TV. The government are trying to make media accessible for everybody, so they do it for free for people from the tax money or from the public money. For example, in the UK, they have the BBC, which is usually by run by the parliament. And the parliament, the UK parliament, they use it like to keep people informed about everything. And also, sometimes Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, they use the term free media or media free or free in the other way also. Free, like it's not, you don't have to pay. And free, you don't have like to be in somebody's ideology or somebody's political opinion, so that you can say whatever you want, however you like it. What can you tell us from your point of view about this, the democracy or the media, the democracy of media?
Okay, it's been discussed a lot by Twitter. Elon Musk says that I believe the free speech absolutism. Free speech absolutism is that everybody can say, can tweet about their opinion, and then. But at the same time, free speech absolutism is dangerous because it can be the part of cancel culture, and the cancel culture can be very harmful for some part of people. You can't say anything, you can say everything that can damage, that can do damage to other people. So it's not the freedom, it's the violence of the language. It's the violence of the discourse that you do harm on purpose. So free speech absolutism is something else. When you are free to say something, you will be sure that you will not be judged. You will not be, you know, arrested at the end of the day. But you are profiled by what you are saying. So free, you are free to say something and you are free to be arrested.
I don't agree, but it's funny. It's funny to say it. Free speech is very important.
Yes, but I'm talking about not my opinion. I'm talking about the situation.
Elon Musk opinion. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
I'm talking about the situation. Yeah, free speech absolutism.
Yes. Sometimes it's like the old, when we were 3 or 5, or I don't remember, when we were 10, they taught us the definition of freedom. Your freedom, you are free until you reach the freedom of the other person,
yeah.
Until you start hurting other people. If you go on Twitter and you see people saying bad stuff about you the whole day, I'm not sure if that's freedom or freedom of speech, or if it is, if it is like hurting other people using the same argument as them. In the past, the progressive people, because the conservative people in the past, all around the world, not only in Europe or in North America, all around the globe, the conservative people were the people that are saying, stop saying that, don't say that, respect this one, respect your elderly, respect your government, respect your the religion. But nowadays, the right people or the conservative people all around the world are the people that are saying free speech. I have to be homophobic and racist and misogynist.
It's the part of cancel culture, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah, me
yes.
too, activism.
No, but I'm saying that people, you can have the freedom of speech, but try not to be, or at least you know you can. I can't. Me personally, I can't allow people to say racist stuff, homophobic stuff,
yeah, that's what
or misogynistic stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
If we have, I don't know, also cancel culture is a very good culture. The Me Too culture is a very good culture. But sometimes we can't. Sometimes it can be used because nobody controls the cancer. How somebody gets cancer, people say, people from the right control it, and other people say people from the left. But we can't be sure if it is good or bad because they go after somebody and they keep going after somebody until the end of it.
It's the violence. But the language can hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
And then turns somebody's life into hell. You know, there was some celebrities. I was very sorry for those celebrities. They were the victims. They become the victims of this cancel culture.
It depends on the situation. But yeah,
it depends. I remember Taha. Taha is a village boy who is trying to cook. And he was a very poor guy, poor, you know, he's just a 13 years old guy. And then he shared his cooking because he wants to feed his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then people make fun of him, his physical appearance. And they say that, hey, Taha, how is your...
That's not cancel culture. That's if you make fun of somebody's appearances, that's bullying, not cancel culture.
Can you allow me just to explain the situation? It's the process of doing something.
Yeah.
He started
in
at
my
the very
opinion,
beginning.
Again, it's my opinion. Yes. I'm not saying that people, that all cancel culture people or bullying people are, they agree on the same stuff. But in my opinion, there is difference between the two of
those
concepts.
I'm going to give this particular examples of Taha. I forgot the surname of it. It's Taha was used to be a very poor guy. And then while he was sharing his Instagram videos, he became popular and he turns out to be a celebrity. And then once he becomes a celebrity, he earns money and he becomes a rich boy. And then he did, he made his nose, he corrected his ears. And then this time, people made fun of him still. And then they keep writing, how dare you do to change your physical? Are you a man? They started to give him a lots of violent attract. And then he said that, I wish I hadn't taken them so serious. Now I am rich, but I'm not happy.
Is it this guy?
Taha. Yes, this guy.
Yes, it is.
I forgot his name.
According to the DW website, it is called Taha Duymaz.
Taha Duymaz, yes. Taha Duymaz was, a celebrity. So this is the part of celebrity culture. And this celebrity culture, you can easily become the victim of this cancel culture. He was canceled because he became rich. And then he said that I am very unhappy because of the situation once he got past. And unfortunately, his life ended tragically in the earthquake. He was
Which
found
earthquake? The Turkish earthquake?
Turkish earthquake. On
that happened 6th, last year?
Yes, 6th February, his body was found, And then even his, tragic death was used as by part of this cancel culture. They still that he used they used this one for his advertisements. But actually, he died. So that's what I'm trying to talk about.
Rest in peace.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. This is the part. This there sometimes the surveillance. We call it the synoptic surveillance. Synoptic surveillance is that so many eyes are watching you, watching the millions of people are watching one guy, and then he became the target of, the other people's hate speech.
Sometimes it happens in Morocco also, where I am from. The internet, just out of being funny and memes and stuff, they get all together after one person and they keep bullying him.
So is it the free speech? Now coming to the first question.
Exactly.
Is it free speech?
It's not
so
free speech.
You can, do you have the right to say everything because you can write it? So this free speech is not free speech. This is a violence of usage. Okay. But that's what I'm talking here. The synoptic surveillance is very terrible things.
Yeah, now that we are almost like in the third And the third part of our the last third part of our program, I want to give the program a full circle, and I want to go back to the our most important question.
Yes.
The future of AI and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Can we, if you were in charge of a country, can you allow artificial intelligence to exist? And what is the positive or negative stuff that you think that could happen
the if, first I, thing
if
is
artificial
that,
intelligence
know,
gets in?
We shouldn't forget the... what is the name is Roboticus or Isamos? What's the... There is a robotic issues of... Did I forget the name of that? Isamov rules.
It's okay. Feel free to say Isamov it however
rules?
You want.
Something like that. Isamov rules. You have to... we have to find a... We have to use a button, stop button, for artificial intelligence to take the control. Isamov.
I don't know.
Yeah, Isamov is the... This is the rules of the... robotic cause. So if you want to use the artificial intelligence, we need to be sure that there will be a control button is in the hands of the human. So it's to do with the human. The control should be in the human. And we have also Lick Leader, another philosophy and the computer engineers.
What do you think about people that are saying that artificial intelligence is the new god, is the new god of the new era?
Not artificial intelligence, but high mind can be a new types of a new.
Can you explain to people what is high mind?
High mind is the combinations of the data and the collective intelligences, and each part of human mind has been the part of this hive. You know, the bees are putting their honey on hives, and our this analogy is being used that it's our minimum units of information of each individual has been the part of this collective intellectual, and then you are the part of this high mind, and this high mind is the combination of whole human, how can we say, intelligence.
Knowledge.
So this
the whole knowledge
yes,
of the whole world.
Knowledge of the world, everything past, our ability, our art, everything has been transcribed to this high mind.
But
and this high mind can be, you know, a kind of holy power.
But people are saying that evolution, you know, like evolution, like people, they say like in the past, people, they started to change. There is people that are smarter than other people. You think that the artificial intelligence are always going to be needing humans, or sometimes they're going to allow themselves to be better than humans, and they let humans out, or they come to the end of human race?
Okay, I can explain with the aids of the philosophers. I have no my own answers. I would help to help with the Bernard Stiegler's and his prosthetic. Yeah.
So
what is prosthetic? Prosthetic means that when you are prosthetic.
It means like industrial. It means like made by people.
No, you need an instrument
to
do something to succeed. In order to reach another level, or in order to survive in the environment, we need something else to reach our aims. For example, we need this microphone to reach the other audiences, to use my voice to be transferred to the audiences. So this is the instrumental to be used. But
do you think that people are going to live forever using artificial intelligence?
What did you say?
Are people gonna be able using artificial intelligence to live forever?
Of course. Or to end the human existence. It's a controversial issue, isn't it?
Are we living?
You are asking me one direct question. We are out of uncertainties, and you are asking a very deliberate question.
No, just your opinion. I don't know. You don't know, but I would like to see what do you think about it. For example, are we living in the same time? Where are we going to see this person that's going to live forever? Are we in the same time as them? In your opinion, based on the research that you do, based on the books that you do, based on the philosophy that you know, based on your expertise?
I'm trying to think about, let's think together. We are, according to existentialist philosophy, we are in the process of something. The human is not a completed something. Exactly. We are incomplete, okay? Even at the end of the day, according to Islamic philosophy, you can't judge people whether they are good or bad until the last, you know, until the last breath.
Exactly. If you say the only God that exists is God, is Allah, in the end of your, in the last day of your day, you can go to heaven. Even if you spend your whole life as a sinner.
Yes.
This is the philosophy. This is the Muslim philosophy.
Muslim philosophy tells us that. But and the existential philosophy tells that we are incomplete.
Not just just to explain, not just say it, but believe it for real. Believe. Because say it, everybody can say it, but believe. If you, in your last breath, you believe that believe. The only God that exists is the Allah, you can go to heaven.
You can go to the heaven. So what I'm telling is, I'm using this example to tell that we are incomplete. We are in the process of being something during our lifetime.
Exactly.
So this time has been given us. But at the same time, if we are progressing, but this progressing has been fastened by the technologies. Mm-hmm. Okay? But how? These human enhancement technologies, for example, nanotechnologies, electronic technologies, maybe the Neuralink technologies, they are trying to take one authentic human intelligence to another level of intelligence. Okay?
Exactly.
So this process of becoming to another level of human being is the beginning of transhumanism. So once you ask me that, are we going to the same transhumanism?
Or post-humanism. You can call it also post-humanism. Bro, there is a possibility. We are talking just a brief, like, brief disclaimer. We are talking about science fiction at this point. We are not, like, saying stuff that happened right now.
Yeah.
But we can say that we may, in our lifetime, get to see a post-human something. What is it? Is it artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. Is it a robot? Is it a half-human, a cyborg, half-human, half-robot? We have no idea. To finish, I want to ask you, how was your experience here in Spain?
It's very, nice experience for me. I really like Spanish culture. Why I like, I don't know. Maybe I believe something, I feel something very close to the Spanish culture. Maybe why my grand fathers lived in Andalusia. I'm not sure about it, but I feel something that I connected to this country. But at the same time, the culture, Mediterranean culture, is very close to Turkish culture as well. And this culture, this Spanish culture, is very inclusive as well. I like this, the way the people interact with each other, and I really like it. But I don't like the way the comfortable life, because I feel jealous, because we are not so living as such comfortable. We don't have the right to have siestas, for example. But I like the idea of having siestas, because that's what my buddy wants it, actually.
If somebody wanted to get in contact with you, how they can be able to find you?
You can reach me by my Twitter account, twitter.com fezg with F E-Z-E-G-E, or you can find me through Instagram, or you can send me the, email feridegudar@gmail.com.
So to finish, I want to say that I'm so happy to have the opportunity to do this episode with you. I'm also, like, very grateful for Irene, like, always to put me together with so amazing and smart people from all over, around the world, and to give us the opportunity. When I say Irene, I'm talking about the vice dean of our political degree. And I am also so happy to To have the opportunity to talk to you in English also. A little bit of time to practice my English. Because
your English was quite good.
Yeah,
come
it's
on.
Good, it's good, yeah. But we usually do the program in
Spanish.
In Spanish.
I wish one day I would attend to you in a Spanish. Yeah. Hablamos español.
So thank you so much for everybody to listening. It was another episode of Derribando Muros. I am Salah Din Nouri. I'm so happy to have been there here with you. See you next week. Hasta luego.
Thank you for having me.
UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.